dive into some of your guys' questions, starting with Brandon Oeming, who left a star comment, which means...
Fuck Washington!
Gosh, I love that thing. I know you guys don't love it, but I do, so it's sticking around. Brandon Oeming writes, honestly, is it worth it giving up our future knowing Braun is going to retire in the next few years? I'm a little skeptical about doing it. Well, the thing there is that, like, you still have AD. Like, this whole podcast is about Anthony Davis, and he is in the middle of his prime and will still be in his prime if LeBron retires at the end of this year or next year or the one after that. Like, AD is still going to be at or near the pinnacle of excuse me. Wow, that came out of nowhere. The pinnacle of his powers. And so so long as you have, in my opinion, a top 5 to 10 talent on your team, it behooves you to maximize that title window while you have that 5 to 10 talent. In the Lakers' case, they have two of them. And I would like to see, like, you know, it just drives all of us insane that the Lakers have basically pushed out on you know, optimizing that title window while they've had them. They've loved selling the tickets. They've loved selling the jerseys. They've loved the attention that AD and LeBron have brought to the organization. And it's been, again, rather cynical to watch them just kind of ride that out while Rob Pelinka tells us all about how they're focused on the future and developing the future and all of those things, which should not be your focus while those two guys are such key parts of your organization, and especially Anthony Davis. Like, it's one thing, I kind of understand it, not really, but I understand it a little bit more with LeBron, where he's going to be 40 next year and it's hard to wrap your mind around, like, what the Lakers are the most terrified of is going all in, using those trade chips, pushing those chips into the middle of the table, optimizing the roster, optimizing this title window, and then LeBron gets hurt. And you're sitting here saying, like, well, what did you think was going to happen? You were pushing the chips into the middle of the table with LeBron James. And I think, especially the last couple of years, Rob and the rest of the organization has basically been looking at LeBron being like, yeah, like, it's great that you're still doing this, but it's hard to actually gamble on that. You know, it's like if you're at a roulette table and you're putting all of your money on either red or black. I prefer black. And black hits 2 times in a row, 3 times in a row, 4 times in a row, 5 times in a row. And you're sitting there like, man, do I still keep putting, like, am I letting it ride still on black, or it, you know, do I start kind of limiting the potential damage here? And I think the Lakers are still kind of weary or a little nervous about continuing to bet this thing that keeps on coming up in their favor. LeBron's holding off of Father Time has continued to come up in their favor, but they haven't quite maximized that experience because they are now kind of nervous about continuing to bet on that being the case. And I think I kind of get it a little bit with LeBron. I don't get it with Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis is barely turning 30 or is barely turning or on the other side of 30, whatever he is. They have had him for his actual prime. And last season was a pinnacle type season from Anthony Davis that went mostly wasted. All right, let's look at, I asked for questions from Twitter. So let's go here. I'm going to look for the ones that I got first. Laker for Life 8 writes, how many games do you see AD playing this year? Well, look, I'm not going to try to, you know, have any special talent when it comes to predicting health, so I'm not going to go that far. But I do think that AD wants to be eligible for those end of season awards. means you have to at least play 65. So in that like 65 to 70 game range, if he is healthy, would be, I think, the goal for him. And I think also like a fair goal from the Lakers where, you know, even if he's healthy, you give him the occasional night off and yeah, it probably means that you lose that game because the Lakers are terrible without him. But, you know, in that like 65 to 70 game range, I think would be what I would be kind of hoping for. Any more than that would be cool, but I think you run the risk of diminishing returns.
Hey there, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a new show. It's called Money Moves, and your money is going to move. We're going to help you make better financial decisions. We're going to call out the BS you're finding all over social media. We're going to give you actionable guidance to make your financial life clearer, less stressful. We're going to answer your financial questions and take the mystery out of your financial life. Follow and listen to Money Moves with Jill Schlesinger wherever you get your podcasts.
The next question here comes from LeGoat, which was Shariah Walla 97, who asked, any talks inside the Lakers about AD at the four? Well, those talks are coming from him. Like Anthony Davis is telling the Lakers, I want to play less center. Like, and by the way, like I kind of get it. Like I really actually kind of do. I wish the Lakers were more equipped to allow AD to play a little bit less center. I still think his most effective position is center. And I still think that because of the shooting concerns, he needs to be mostly a center. But, you know, you sprinkle it in, you have some really big lineups there with him at the four and another five next to him. And like Rui or Vanderbilt at the three to help with your kind of overall athleticism. It's hard to have AD at the four and Vanderbilt at the three, you know, without having an absolute knockdown three-point shooter at the center spot. You're going to run into some real shooting concerns there. So maybe you would have like Rui at the three, or last year with the way that LeBron shot the ball, you could have him at the three in some of those lineups. But yeah, you know, in terms of like conversations within the Lakers, I've been told all summer that the Lakers at AD's request are looking for ways to play him a little bit less at center than he has the last couple of years, which has a lot to, you know, which is somewhat a result of the way that he has slimmed down this summer, where he's just like, look, I'm slimming down. I want to be more explosive. You know, look, as somebody who has lost a bunch of weight in the last, you know, 6 months or so, my joints feel a lot better. I actually mowed the lawn tonight before I recorded this. Like I'm in good enough shape to where like I was able to go out there. It was like 90 something degrees at 8 o'clock at night. And I had, you know, was able to go out there and mow the lawn nice and quickly. We live on about like half an acre and we have like a bit of a hill. So normal, like last year, if I would have done that, I wouldn't have been able to record this show, or the show wouldn't have gone nearly as well as this one has gone so far. So I can speak to the improvement on your joints that comes with having less poundage, you know, on them, in both senses of the word. And I do think that, you know, AD basically went about slimming up a little bit this offseason and told the Lakers, hey, this is what I'm thinking about doing. Hopefully Christian is up to playing more center with me next year, or you're able to go out and get somebody who fits in that mold next to me. But this is the deal. And you know, I get it. I get it from AD's perspective, and I hope the Lakers are able to execute on it. Let's look at some of the live comments here. And yeah, so people asking Lakers rumors, anything new, what happened to the Grant trade, all that from patron sent. Look, I don't have anything new to report. I have a piece coming hopefully soon. I think in the next few days or so for Lakers Daily, kind of talking about three major factors that led to the Lakers not being able to do anything. You know, why you mad, bro? Also asking about Jeremy Grant. Do you think the holdup on Grant's trade appears to be Connect's trade eligibility because they were high on him? No, the Lakers don't want to trade anything beyond one first rounder for Jeremy Grant. And I honestly, I get it. Like the Portland Trail Blazers themselves, like I talked to an executive who was that one, the scout, I forget. A lot of people said this, but like one quote in particular was really good with it. Like this scout basically said, like Portland gave up one first for Jeremy Grant. Why 2 years later on a bigger contract are they asking for two first rounders? Like that doesn't make any sense. So like that's the biggest holdup there is that Portland and Joe Cronin, basically they outlined the price. They did this with Miami with Dame and they're doing it here with the Lakers with Grant, where they basically, you know, Rob calls up Joe. Hey Joe, how's it going? Joe says, good. So happy to hear from you, Rob. And Rob goes, any update? What are we thinking? Still thinking, you know, hey, we're getting close to training camp. Do you really want this guy in your camp going into next year? Joe says, yeah, I'm fine with it. So long as you aren't willing to give up the second first rounder. And that's the extent of the conversation. I saw Joe and Rob talking in the hallways there at Thomas and Mac, you know, just kind of, and not just in the hallways, but you know, occasionally, you know, around the court and stuff like that. They have had plenty of conversation there, at times involving Clutch too. And, you know, it still winds up leading right back to that same, you know, roadblock that is Portland wanting two first rounders for Jeremy Grant and the Lakers adamantly not wanting to give up two first rounders for Jeremy Grant. And, there are some other complicating factors there. Like Portland doesn't want D'Angelo Russell. They have a bunch of guards there already. And he doesn't exactly have the kind of reputation around the league as somebody who would help groom those young guards. So they aren't interested in D'Angelo Russell. And the Lakers, I don't think are all that interested in giving up both Jared Vanderbilt and Rui Hachimura for Jeremy Grant. I think they would like to hold on to both of those wings. So that's essentially what they keep on running into. And I've reached the point here where, you know, you guys know me, I don't normally pull punches when it comes to this front office. I completely understand them not wanting to give up more than one first rounder, maybe even a first rounder for Jeremy Grant. Like that's, you know, there's some real questions there about him as a player and the mentality that he brings at this stage of his career to the court.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino
and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
All right, let's go back to Anthony Davis here. Let's see. Self attention layer 24. What do you see? Where do you see AD's game evolving the most next year? Also, the video is about to be 5 minutes long. Hey, we are at 41 minutes, kind fellow. Look, AD is either 30 or on the other side of 30. I don't think his game is going to be evolving too much. He's just at that stage of his career where he kind of is who he is as a basketball player, which is still fine. He's still a great basketball player, but that's kind of like the issue there when you're talking about evolution of AD's game. But I was really kind of my eyebrow raised, right? When I heard JJ Redick say, we kind of want to see AD as more of a hub. Last year, I don't have the splits in front of me, but there was a stat that I was keeping a close eye on over the course of the year where the Lakers were some like astronomical, had some kind of astronomical record in terms of wins and losses and win percentage when AD had like five or more or six or more assists. And, that I think is the most dangerous version of Anthony Davis because it means other guys are making shots. And then it also means that Anthony Davis is playing with some real oomph. You know, he's drawing double teams and he's making the right reads coming out of those double teams, or he's dribbling into like, this is when any basketball player is playing their best basketball, especially those the primary creators, is they'll dribble themselves into trouble, knowing where that trouble is going to be coming from, and then taking advantage of the trouble once it arrives. And when AD is doing that stuff, he is like legitimately a top three player in the NBA. I'm not bullshitting. I swear to God, I fully 100% feel that way, where if AD is playing that kind of confident, where he's that kind of a facilitator and he's also scoring, and then you always know what he's doing on the defensive side of the ball, that is a two-way impact player that basically nobody else is capable of on planet Earth, period. And if Redick and his coaching staff are able to get more of that kind of Anthony Davis this season, that would be like a truly spectacular thing to behold. I'm not kidding. Like that would be incredible. I don't think you're going to get it more than like once every other week or so, because he has to do so much on the defensive side of the ball too. But that to me, like if we're talking about potential evolution, him as a facilitator, I think is where he has the most room for potential growth. All right. Let's go with at LAL Prime, who asked, is this the year AD finally gets his Defensive Player of the Year award? He played incredibly well defensively last year and so far at the Olympics. So I kind of ranted and raved about this on Twitter earlier today. I've made these points in the past before, but I'll go ahead and keep on playing the hits. But I think the aspect of the game that we are still the like dumbest about is defense. We don't seem to understand how to talk about it. Those people who try to talk about it from a statistical standpoint really are missing the point. I think we like from a statistical standpoint, I don't think we know dick about defense. I'm not like, it's just, we don't know anywhere near enough about defense to try to define it statistically. So you got that going on. And like, for whatever reason, we have decided to make the most reductive decisions on that side of the ball when we talk about these year-end awards. And we basically just say, like, who's the center on the best defense in the league? And it's like Brook Lopez, you know, or it's Rudy Gobert more often than not. We say, like, best defensive player on the best defensive team. And then that's the extent of the critical thinking that we do about this award. And it drives me absolutely insane. I think that approach completely ignores versatility, something that becomes even more important in the playoffs. That's why you sometimes see in the past those defensive players of the year struggle in the postseason. You'll see like that approach will lead to like Marcus Smart winning defense. Like, I at least like that was finally creative, even though I thought it was also ridiculous. I think a lot of times, like especially with the Celtics, you have, look, you just have a lot of people in NBA media, especially national NBA media, that come from the East Coast, that come from Boston, and they're going to look for any reason to crown Boston as something that they may not be in that moment. This last year, there was a special team, so I'm fine with crowning them as they needed to be crowned as they eventually went on to be champions. But Marcus Smart should never have won a Defensive Player of the Year. The fact that Bam and AD, two of the most versatile defenders that we will ever see, have a combined zero Defensive Player of the Year awards just really kind of speaks to how bad we are at talking about defense. And I think what it really comes down to is you have national media. Like, in order to really be able to tell the story about what's going on the defensive side of the ball, you need to watch not just that team on a nightly basis, but you need to watch that player in that defense on a nightly basis. And you wind up a lot of times having to go back and rewatch that player on that team on a nightly basis. And one, national media just doesn't have the time to do that. So that's going to run, you know, that's going to give you issues there. You know, those are the issues that are going to arise in those kinds of votes. But then also, if you don't have the time, if you cover that team locally, to also go out and see what's going on for another team. So, like, if you do cover Rudy Gobert and the Minnesota Timberwolves, and you watch him in that defense on a nightly basis, you're going to be swayed by all that you watch on that nightly basis. And you're not going to watch what's going on in Miami and what's going on in Milwaukee and what's going on in LA with more versatile defenders that are being asked to do more in worse defensive situations. And all of this is to say that, like, honestly, I would be perfectly fine doing away with the Defensive Player of the Year award. I just think we're so bad at talking about it that that is the award, that and Rookie of the Year are the two awards that I think we would actually improve discourse around the NBA by getting rid of the award completely and just relying on first and second team all defensive type presences. And I see people point to, like, well, what about net defensive rating and how doesn't that tell the story? If that player is such a better defender, then of course that defense is going to be better with that defender on the court. And look, Rudy Gobert always, that their defenses are always way better with Rudy Gobert on the court. It's like, that's fine. That's cool. That's fine. But if that's the extent to statistically that we're going to, like, that's how far we can get having that conversation statistically about this stuff, then we should probably, like, wait to come back to those conversations when we have a little bit better information statistically to work off of. And we just don't right now. So all of this is to say, like, is this going to be the year that AD gets his Defensive Player of the Year award? No, it isn't, because the Lakers are going to be bad to mediocre defensively this year again, and voters again are going to do the same damn thing that they keep on doing year in, year out, where it's the best defensive player on the best defensive team, and that player is going to get credit for playing with Anthony Edwards and as he enters his prime, and Jalen McDaniels or Jaden or whichever one is in Minnesota, and Gobert is going to win it again. And it's just going to be the same tired conversations all over again, while we ignore, again, the fact that the Lakers front office had a team that they knew was not good enough, didn't add to it, actually lost guys from it, and they're telling AD, hey, bud, go ahead and shoot another one of those webs out of your hands to hold this shit together, because we ain't doing shit to help you out. All right, that is going to do it here for this episode of the Lakers Lowdown podcast. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. A reminder to please hit that subscribe button if you guys are watching live on YouTube right now. If you guys are watching on Twitter, head on over to youtube.com/@LakersLounge and hit subscribe there. And then if you guys are listening in podcast form tomorrow morning, hit subscribe wherever it is that you get your podcasts, and specifically at Odyssey. I'm a company man. And then tell your friends, you know, who respect your opinion, that you love this show. It's a great show. It's the best show, whatever you want to say. And then to those who don't respect your opinion, tell them it's the worst show. That, you know, this guy who fights with a stuttering problem and has his voice intact, like one out of every three shows, is you know, gets on there and rants and raves a little bit too much, and maybe they'll go and subscribe to the show out of spite. But that is probably going to do it here for this episode, and for this week's episodes of the Lounge. We have another week ahead of us with more previews ahead of us, and we have more Team USA games to break down as they enter the knockout phase. So we'll break those games down as well. And until the next time you guys hear from me, I'm saying have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's, and I will talk to you. Didn't need to hit that button. That was an accident. Have a good one, everybody.
As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.